Welcome to The Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
All right, Blake, we had some, let's just call it not super interesting, but potentially notable games that happened over the past week since we last recorded. Nothing as exciting as Malachi Flynn going off for 50, but we had those three games, Philly, Brooklyn, Memphis, all of those losses. We also got a little bit of news today about Cade Cunningham's knee injury. He's been missing games due to knee injury management, quote unquote. They just updated that to include some tendonitis effectively. Where do you want to start? We're going to hit on both. I'll leave it up to you. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, not a ton to look back on with these games. I mean, three losses since we recorded last. We're recording on Wednesday evening, so a day after the Pistons lost in Philly to the Sixers. Jaden Ivey had a nice first half, which was nice. It was nice to see a good game out of him, get some scoring early, not maximum efficiency. But the Cade news is not a total surprise. I have been a little surprised over the past few games that he's been listed as questionable. I'm just thinking, just shut him down for the season. You mentioned that he might be trying to get to just like a 65 game threshold, which might be the thing there. But yeah, I think at this point you just got to shut him down. And luckily we only have a few more left where we have to wonder whether he's playing or not.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they upped his injury, or at least, you know, formalized it on the injury report instead of just basically load management. Now his injury is knee tendonitis, which the only heal for that is rest. And it is nothing to worry about. You know, I think we need to make it clear that this is one of these situations where if the Pistons were competing for a playoff spot, they were competing for a play-in spot, like Cade would be out there. He would be playing right now. The injury that he has, right, the knee tendonitis, a lot of guys can play through that. And, you know, even on top of it, this is probably going back to that game, I think it was against Denver, where in the first half he kind of stepped wrong, knee buckled a little bit on him, and he was out the rest of the game. So he's probably been playing through this already for a large portion of the second half of the season. And now, you know, that things are just kind of over, they are basically opting to give him rest, a little bit of a head start on the offseason. So it's not like, you know, when he was missing games last season for surgery, this isn't anything serious. But as a fan, it's a bummer. You know, we only got, what, three games left. It'd be a lot more fun to watch if he was out there. I really like watching him play.
Yeah, you want to see your best players play, obviously. And since he hasn't been out, the rest of, well, we're missing Asar Thompson as well, but the rest of the, like Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren and Sasser haven't been leading the team to wins by any means. It's not only their fault, but just of the young players that are still out there that are available. And there were some winnable games. Like, they played a Memphis team that is fully decimated with injury as well. They were up 20 points against the Nets and blew that one. And then against Philly, I never really thought they were going to win that game by any means, but they did cut it close, bring it to within one in the third quarter. So it was doable, obviously not as doable when you're playing against Joel Embiid and a team like the Sixers when you're missing your star player. But yeah, ever since Malachi Flynn's 50 piece, there hasn't really been anything to write home about too much.
So can we talk about Jaden Ivey a little bit? Because that Philly game, it really stood out to me, his first and second halves. And credit to Bryce Simon, Motor City Hoops. He's the one who pointed this out to me, gosh, I want to say a couple months ago at this point, right? It's been a while. But it really jumped out to me against the 76ers. And I'm wondering if you've seen this as well, where he comes into the game in the first half and he's really aggressive about getting to the rim. He's really decisive about picking his spots. And I like his process quite a bit better. But then he returns in the second half and he's settling for a lot of threes. He's pulling up in the mid-range more often than he usually does, and he's just generally shooting less efficient shots for Jaden Ivey, and I like his process a lot less. And it's a little odd because for most players, when you have situations where it's not working, right, things aren't clicking, that's usually when you get less aggressive. But for the most part, when guys are really aggressive and it's working, like what Jaden Ivey did in the first half against Philly, him being aggressive, pushing the ball up the court quickly, even off of inbounds, and getting all the way to the rim, it was really working for him. I think he had 17, 20 points at halftime. Like he had a great half. And then he came back in the second half, and it was a totally different Jaden Ivey. Like, he took his foot off the gas pedal. And it's just a little confusing to me. I wonder if you've seen the same thing.
A little bit. I think I mentioned this maybe last week. Like, Cade is almost the opposite. We've seen him get out to slow starts and then really come on in second quarter, second half, whatever it might be. And Ivey definitely seems like the opposite. I feel like I've seen him, especially with Cade out, hunting more opportunity, just getting more volume and usage, and sometimes it works. Like, he's just been so inconsistent to me. I don't know if it's necessarily first quarter, like first half, second half thing, or what it is, like if he's just struggling to find his looks and just build confidence on a consistent basis, because it seems like we've seen so many flashes, whether you want to put together a string of games or just moments in certain games, but it's not very, I guess, long standing yet. I mean, he's obviously trying to find that. We just haven't seen it yet.
I think what's a little bit frustrating for me, particularly with Jaden Ivey doing this, is you're right. He's doing these things, right, where he's having really, really great halves or really great entire games. A lot of times when not a lot of times, but occasionally it's happened where he's had that type of night when Cade's been out. So like the first half against the 76ers. And the stuff that he does in those games, in those halves where he plays really well, fits really well next to Cade Cunningham. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the fact that Cade's not out there, it kind of pushes that narrative. Like, oh, these guys, they don't fit together. But what he did in the first half against Philly, he was decisive when he got the ball. He was pushing the ball up the floor quickly. Like, an inbounds pass became a fast break at least three or four times because Jaden Ivey just wanted to push the ball. And he was pretty good off the catch as well. Like, these are all things that fit really, really well next to a slow you down kind of guard like Cade Cunningham. And of course, Cade wasn't out there, and we don't get to see them both feeding off each other in that way. And it was just a little bit of a bummer that it's happened now a couple times in this stretch where Cade's been out with this knee management issue. And yeah, that again, this is just like the fan in me. Like, I want to see it because he's starting to do the stuff. Jaden Ivey's doing the thing, for lack of a better phrase. He's doing it. It's just Cade's not out there to play off of it. It's just a bummer.
Yeah, Ivy's actually shooting above 48% from three in the last five games, and Cade has only played in one of those games. So I would have to comb through the stats better to see what he shot in that one game that Cade did play, but I wouldn't be shocked if that wasn't an extremely efficient night from three. It's just, you're right. It's so weird how there are these stretches where we see him shoot the ball well, find his looks, get close to the rim and finish with good touch. And then it's just not long standing yet. And you're right. When it's on, the fit makes sense. But when it's not, it really just sticks out to you, which is sad. And only in year two for Jaden Ivey.
Yeah, agreed. So, hey, talking about the fit in that two guard spot, it's a couple weeks ago now, I think, but you did a really, really nice profile on a draft prospect that might be a pretty good fit here for the Pistons. Could you kind of give the listeners the rundown of what that was, who that guy is, and a little bit of a preview or breakdown from the article?
Yeah. So I wrote like a Pistons draft profile on Tennessee's Dalton Kinect. I'll drop the link in the chat. Put it out right before the Sweet 16 because Tennessee actually played in Detroit. But Kinect is just a scorer. He's a transfer. He started the JUCO route, then played at Northern Colorado, and then went to Tennessee this year. And he wasn't super high on really any draft boards to begin the year and really just came on because of what he's doing at Tennessee. The dude can basically just score the ball. He can shoot the ball. He has work to do on defense that is something that stands out. But the one thing I like about that is he knows he needs to improve on it. He actually, when he was in the transfer portal last season, he wanted to go to Tennessee to play with that good defense and specifically their coach, Rick Barnes, who Kinect actually mentioned in an interview, I believe with CBS, that Kevin Durant is his favorite player and Rick Barnes coach KD at Texas. So that combined with just being such a strong defensive team, like he went there to improve defensively. But overall, yeah, Bryce, I am being nice. That is the one like glaring thing with him, but he shoots it so well. And he was really like the man at Tennessee, and it looks like it's translatable. There are questions, of course, depending on where he lands, what the volume is he gets. But all in all, he can score, he can shoot, and he doesn't necessarily need to be the primary ball handler. Like he fits more in that like two, maybe three spot. He's 6'6", so depending where he lands and who he's playing next to, we'll see. But I mean, next to Cade Cunningham, a guy who can shoot it and score it like him consistently, like he's done this year and through his college career, makes sense.
So talk a little bit about the like types of shots that Dalton Kinect really excels in, the role that he plays in that Tennessee offense, and how that might be a nice fit, I guess, with Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, so actually when I was writing this profile, it was like right after Dante DiVincenzo went for 40 against the Pistons. And what stuck out to me was Kinect might be a guy like that, like not using DiVincenzo as a player comp, but using him as a guy who is not your primary scorer or even maybe secondary scorer by any means, but he can do that on any given night. And that's super important. Like we've seen Cade Cunningham have off nights. If like not saying Jaden Ivey is the future secondary scorer for this team, but if he is, we've seen him struggle as well. So having a guy like Kinect, whether he's a second or third option offensively, I think is huge for any team because he spaces the floor. He can really shoot it from anywhere. And he's also getting stronger. He's comfortable driving to the rim and has nice touch from there as well. So I think he really just fits as that off guard that can shoot the ball and space the floor for you. So your primary guard or ball handler, whoever it is, can go to work. But when you need it, he's there to get a bucket. Like the dude just gets buckets is the simple, quick elevator pitch for him.
Now, is he a guy that is going to need the ball a lot to score those buckets, right, that you said that he gets? or do you think when he gets to the NBA, is he mostly an off-ball guy who's got maybe a little bit of pick-and-roll efficacy here and there when he needs it?
I don't think he's going to need the ball in his hands. Like, he was definitely the primary initiator for Tennessee. He was asked to do so much, and I mean – he succeeded at it. Like they were a good team. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league. So, I mean, that end of the floor for him is like a conversation totally separate, but I don't see him really as a guy who needs the ball in his hands in the NBA. I'm trying to think of a good player comp for him, but it's definitely just someone I see who maybe he plays in the Jaden Ivey role right now, not the same type of player, but a guy who doesn't have the ball in his hands, but can run off screens and really, like, for that spot, that role that Jaden Ivey is being asked to fill to work, that guy needs to be able to shoot the ball, which with Ivey, what we've seen is some nights he does, some nights he doesn't. Overall, inconsistency, but with Connect, he's shot it well throughout his whole college career, so he can play in that role off of a Cade Cunningham, off of a insert other X lead ball handler here, and be that secondary or tertiary scorer.
Yeah, I agree. You know, my thing with Connect, and I just, for full transparency, I really like him. I have him pretty high on my board, but, you know, at least offensively, he seems to be kind of that rare shooter where he's almost as deadly off the dribble as he is off the catch. And he's a very, very good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Like, yes, he can score from all three levels, but that's probably the one thing I would think he's going to bring at the NBA level, where he can just immediately shoot a very high percentage from 3-point range. He can do it from deep. He can do it off motion. He could do it off the catch. And he can do it just by taking a pick and roll and popping if the guy goes underneath. And that's going to open up a lot of his other scoring, right? So he's a very good mid-range shooter as well. And I do think he's a little underrated around the basket. Coffee, I saw you brought it up, a question of, is he more athletic than Putty Boeheim? Yes, by quite a bit. Dalton Connect is got broad shoulders. He's very strong. He doesn't get pushed off his line too much for a guy kind of as wiry as he is right now. And he was also a little bit of a late bloomer, so there might be some room to pack on more muscle. But, like, he can jump. He's pretty fast. He moves. Like, he's not great laterally. That's going to be the holdup on him. And you keep bringing up the defense. I don't even think that's a question. It's not going to be good. He's not going to be a good defender. You're going to have to cover for that. And in that way, he's not an amazing fit next to Cade. But offensively, I'm not sure you can find a player in this draft that is both more plug and play than Dalton Connect and a better fit next to Cade. I don't think you can find a guy that's better at both of those things than Dalton Connect. Would you agree? That was a hot take. Now I just want your opinion on it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, what makes this draft so interesting is, like, I think teams will be in the position to draft for fit. It's a total debate on whether they necessarily should. And no one at, I think you and I, please correct me if I'm wrong, both have Alex Saar at the top of our boards, but I don't think that teams are, like, no one guy is really, like, running away with it and saying, pick me number one. So I think Connect could have a case to go if the Pistons have a floor of pick number five, they end up with that fifth pick. Hopefully not, but we've seen it happen in the past. Like, he has a case there because he does fit well into Monty Williams's offense. Whereas in other years, if there's, like, a true top five, the team might not have been in a position to do that. And like you said, he probably is never going to be a good defender in the NBA. I think at Tennessee, because his teammates are so good defensively, a lot of his flaws often get covered up and he doesn't have as much pressure on him on that end of the floor. So that's another thing to think about. And he also, just another consideration with Connect, is he is older. I believe he turns 23 mm-hmm. before the draft. So he's not a finished product. He's has more upside, but obviously the upside isn't the same as if you're drafting, like, a 19-year-old, like, unproven guy, like a Cody Williams or a player like that.
Yeah, and I just want to really quickly hit on the defense as well, because, you know, you brought up Tennessee. They had maybe the best defense, one of the best defenses in college basketball this season. I mean, they were fantastic. And I do think there is something to be said about a guy being able to exist and not sink the ship, so to speak, with that mm-hmm. defense. Like, Dalton Kincaid is not a good defender. I don't expect him to be a plus defender by any means. But the fact that Tennessee was still able to build out one of the best defenses in college basketball with him on the court playing, you know, the vast majority of minutes their entire season. Like, there's something to be said about that. I'm not sure what part of that's going to translate to the NBA, but at a bare minimum, you know that it's possible. You know that you could take this guy and put a really good defense together with a five-man unit. So maybe he's a little bit better of a team defender than we're giving him credit for right now. Maybe he's a great communicator if he's not a great, you know, lateral mover and he's not always in the right positions. Like, I don't know what it is, and I'm not necessarily sure what the takeaway is there, but there's something in that that is valuable that I can't put my finger quite on.
Yeah, you're right. When I was writing about him and looking at defense, like, one stat I put in there was that Tennessee as a team was third in the country in adjusted team, like, defensive efficiency based on KenPom stats. Like, that's in the entire country, and that's when Kincaid is on the floor for like 35 minutes a game or whatever it is. And another thing I like about him is, I mean, everyone should go watch his, like, highlights or just clips from his last season at Northern Colorado, because he was doing exactly what he was doing at Tennessee, but in, like, another league. And it's just fun to watch. But what was so impressive to me is that he carried that over into a much better league and was the guy for one of the best teams in the country who made a run in the NCAA tournament. So it's not easy to do that for anyone. Yeah, he's a little bit older, and yeah, he was already, like, doing it somewhere else, but they played in some pretty high profile games, and he put up some pretty crazy performances in those games, which is really why people have him in the top 10 and inching even closer to their draft boards or in their mock drafts and whatever.
Yeah, I do have him number 3. So Bryce put it in the chat here. He was saying,
spicy.
How high does Wes have Dalton Kincaid? Very high. I have him number 3. If it's not Sarr or Risa Shea, I would be taking Dalton Kincaid. And I do. All right, the last thing we're going to say, and then we're going to go ahead and get into some questions. But to the age thing, okay, Dalton Kincaid is just about the same age as Jaden Ivey and just about the same age as Cade Cunningham. Yes, those guys came out 3 and 2 years before Kincaid is coming out of college now, but he was also a little bit of a late bloomer. All I'm saying is that it's not like this is a totally finished prospect by any means. There's a lot of room to grow offensively as well. Like, he's not who he is. He's going to get better, and that's all. You know, if you think Jaden Ivey still has ceiling, don't Kincaid still has room to grow up as well.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think he's a finished product by any means. The only reason his age is, like, a discussion to me is because there are those guys in this draft class that are true upside swings that you know about, but you don't know a ton about, and it's much more of a risk than drafting a guy like Kincaid or someone like that. So it's a debate that I'm sure every organization has, but pretty confident that he's going to be a good NBA player and carve out a role for himself and a good one wherever he ends up. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I'm excited to see where that one lands.
All right, let's dive into some questions. We got this first one here from Mr. Jones. And since we're already talking about the 2-guard spot, let's talk about Jaden Ivey. He says, does Jaden Ivey's post-game comments about not being frustrated after a blowout concern you? Jaden Ivey seems more happy. He finally shot it well, in his opinion. That's him. That's not us. Doesn't think too much about team success, is his assertion. So do you think Jaden Ivey not being super bothered at this point by a blowout, do you think that's a reason to be concerned?
Not really to me. I mean, I get it. I get that's like not what you want to hear, but just because of the game's context at this point, like these games don't mean anything. Yes, they're playing to not have the worst record in franchise history, which I think we all know that ship has sailed. They need to win out to just tie that. So at this point, I think it's just about personal development and growing as like Ivy and Duren should be, and Sasser for that matter, should be working to just gain chemistry with each other, play off each other, just get some more reps on the floor at the same time. But a big part of that to me as well is just individual guys like Ivy, who has had a streaky year, is trying to string good performances for himself together after he's struggled in some games. I think it's fair at this point just to not be totally frustrated at the loss. Even I know how bad that sounds, but I just think with the context of the games that this team is playing and that they don't really matter, I'm not outraged by it by any means.
So I agree with you. Like, I don't think this is a concerning thing for Jaden Ivey specifically, but I do think this might get to something else that's a little bit concerning. And that's just that, look, this team has lost so many games, so many games since Jaden Ivey's been drafted, since Cade Cunningham's been drafted. These past three seasons, they have been so bad. They've lost so many games. And at some point, that's going to start to take a toll on the guys you have in the locker room. And I wonder if we're starting to see a little bit of it now. I mean, Jaden Ivey making a comment like that, you know, that doesn't scream competitor, but that's not really his fault. We know he's a competitor, right? You know, Jalen Duren against Philadelphia was frequently not running back on defense or running ahead on offense. Like, the effort level was just noticeably worse than other nights that we've seen out of him, or even that we saw out of him his rookie year, right? Like, I'm wondering if maybe this is indicative of some of this losing just getting beaten into the heads of all these guys, and maybe that's something that is a problem, you know, long-term outlook-wise. And it's not anything that these guys can control. I mean, who brought it up? Chili Damon brought it up. Jaden Ivey is, he says, with the LA Fitness All-Stars, which is a good joke. But, you know, look who's out there on the court, right? It's Jaden Ivey, it's Jalen Duren, and Marcus Sasser. And then you've got a bunch of guys that are kind of fighting for their NBA careers. Like yeah, you're playing the Philadelphia 76ers with a healthy Joel Embiid. How do you think that's going to go? You're not going to shock them. You're not going to surprise them. You just don't have the talent level to do it. So I don't know. I don't think that comment is anything to be concerned about for Jaden Ivey. I wonder if maybe that comment kind of leans into something maybe we should be concerned about just locker room wide. Has all this losing been detrimental in some way to all of these young guys and their development? And that's something I'm a little worried about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, after the Brooklyn loss where they blew that lead, Monty Williams mentioned that he wasn't really outraged either. He was happy with how the team competed, which I know that one was a little more like eye-opening to me. But relating it to Ivy, what Ivy said after the Philadelphia loss, maybe it is a bit of what they're being told in the locker room right now. Maybe it is just, they're not being told to go out there and lose games by any means, but everyone knows that this season is over. It's been over for, I don't even know how long now. So they just got to get through these last few games and reset, and somehow whoever's still here finds a way to come out and hopefully not let the grueling past two seasons get in their head, which that is so difficult. I don't know how you even do that.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. So this next one here, this is from our guy Coffee. Appreciate you, man. I know you're in the live chat as well, but you submitted this one here in the DBB comments. So this is more just like a statement, but I wanted to kind of bring it up just to get your thoughts on it. He's asking if Blake, you specifically, Blake, if you could explain that Cade and Ivy's average 3-point attempts per game and 3-point percentage basically means that Jaden Ivey is taking one less 3-pointer for every 10.5 games and essentially is making only adding less than 0.3 points per game than if he made the same 3-point percentage as Cade. Now, all of this to say, I know this was a lot of numbers, guys, so bear with us, but all of this was effectively to say, why are we so worried about Jaden Ivey's jump shot and 3-point shot when Cade Cunningham is more or less making them at about the same efficiency? And I wanted to get your thoughts onto that. I'm playing host here and I'm making this a question.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Coffee.
Yeah. Thank you, Coffee. I'll be honest, reading through this sort of broke my brain a little bit at the first time. So I hope we got the question right. But I think a little bit, and I think this answer is not being totally fair to Jaden Ivey a bit, but I think it's because we know that Cade Cunningham is the franchise player. We have seen him. We've seen improvement from Cade as a shooter through his career. I don't think we've seen like a similar leap. We've seen Ivy shoot the heck out of the ball for stretches, but we haven't seen him string it together. And I think a little bit of it is that presumably Cade is the guy that you're building around. So he's going to be here and the rest of the guys around him need to figure out how to play off of him, get to their spots, know their role, know where they're going to be able to score, where they're going to be able to get their usage. And we've seen Ivy struggle with that. So I think that might be where he's getting a little bit more flack and discussion. So that's mainly what it is for me. Wes, I'm curious what you have to think too.
So my mind went two places. The first was what Bryce just brought up here, on versus off ball. Jaden Ivey's getting a lot of catch and shoot looks. Cade Cunningham is not. Well, he is, but he's getting more off the dribble looks. Off the dribble threes are a lot harder than catch and shoot threes. You expect a guy who shoots a lot of off the dribble looks to have a lower percentage. And I think that does bear out when you start looking at the catch and shoot numbers. Cade's is pretty good. Ivy's is pretty bad. And that kind of drives the split in their percentages, even though it's not all that large right now. The other thing I wanted to point out was his splits month over month. So Jaden Ivey started the year at 43% from three, then went to 33, 25, back up to 35, then to 43 in the month of February, 23 in the month of March, and right now on a low sample size of only five games is at 48% from three in the month of April. And you kind of pair this with his field goal percentage as well. So again, starting in October, going all the way to now, 47%, 52%, down to 40%, 45%, 43%, 38% in March, 41% in April. The three-point percentage has kind of been all over the place. But his field goal percentage generally has been trending downward. And that has been happening as he's taken more threes. And I think that's becoming part of the problem. Jaden Ivey, the role that he's playing, he needs to be a high volume catch and shoot guy, not because of anything that he's doing well or poorly, but because the rest of the roster demands it. Asar Thompson, when he was playing, he can't shoot it. Isaiah Stewart is a pretty good three-point shooter, but he's not taking a huge volume. And, you know, it's kind of the only tool he's got in the tool shed on offense. And then Jalen Duren, as we know, not a three-point shooter as well. So in order for that all to click, Jaden Ivey's got to be a high-volume catch-and-shoot three-point guy. And that's really started to hurt his efficiency as he has taken more threes. So you've seen that progress downward as the season has gone on. Now you compare that to Cade Cunningham, who has only improved both from the field and from three as the season's progressed. So I think part of the split in concern is the trends as they've gone on through the year. Cade started really cold and has been getting a lot better. Jaden Ivey started really hot, but as his role started to demand him take more of those shots, it's gotten worse. So I would say that's where the concern is really coming from. For me, that as well as the on and off ball split that Bryce brings up here.
Right. And yeah, I don't think like Cade is absolved by any means. I feel like we'd still want to see him get to a higher level as a shooter. Like, hopefully he's not a finished product. But yeah, when you're that plus the context of us questioning the fit of those two on the same team, I think it's an important discussion to have. And we know the type of players that need to play alongside Cade for this thing to finally work at some point. And Ivy isn't a good defender by any means. So to offset that, he needs to be able to shoot the ball at a high rate as well, which we have seen at times, like Wes said, but we've also seen it on the totally different end of the spectrum at other times as well.
All right, this next one here, this is from our guy Camille. Welcome back, man. But he says, who among the young players would you like to trade? Or I guess we could change that to, if you're going to trade any of the young players currently on the roster, who would it be? And then which players from free agency would you like to see added to the team?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd necessarily like to trade any of them, but we know something has to give here. So I'm just going to take this from more of a who would I be okay giving up, just because we've talked about Ivy. I mean, I think if there was the right deal, I think it would probably make sense to move him, depending on how the draft shakes out. And if they do get an Alex Sarr, for example, I could see moving Jalen Duren there as well. Or if they bring someone in via trade or free agency. Also, looping Sasser, like Sasser hasn't been great by any means lately. He's not as, like, I don't think he has as much value by any means. So I think he might, like, if a team is interested in him and there's a deal on the table, he might be someone that the Pistons are okay with parting with just for the sake of getting the deal done. I'm just guessing that that may not totally be the case. They may see him as that lead backup guard for the long haul. And then in terms of free agents, we've heard the fits like the Tobias Harris's, Buddy Hield's, the guys that'll be available this season. Really, I think they need to prioritize a backup big who can protect the rim. I know, Wes, you've brought up Goga Batadze in the past. Hopefully they could bring him in on a cheap deal and be that backup big that can protect the rim, depending on whoever the starting center is. I think that would be great if Jalen Duren is still in that role. But overall, besides that, I think you need to prioritize just getting guys who can shoot the ball consistently. We've heard Grayson Allen. I'm not sure if they'll be able to get him, but he's a guy that could come in and space the floor for you. So really anyone like that, Royce O'Neal, a guy who can shoot it and play defense as well. None of these signings are earth-shattering by any means, but I think they're all players who could help at least raise the floor of this team and make it a more competent NBA roster.
Yeah, and I'm just going to stick on the free agents thing here because we also got this question from Base Pistons on Twitter, but just mentioning top three guys the Pistons should sign and three guys that the Pistons should not sign. And I made a whole big list of free agent targets. So I wanted to run these by you and, you know, kind of get your thoughts. The first group of guys is guys that I would think you're probably throwing a fairly large contract at, but it's also relatively short. So that would be Gary Trent Jr., DeMar DeRozan, Malik Beasley, Grayson Allen, and D'Angelo Russell. Some smaller moves that they could potentially do on the side with or without any of those bigger deals. Chetty Osmond, Kelly Oubre, Goga Batadze, and Mo Bamba as well, just kind of even a cheaper potentially flyer of a guy that could shoot it a little bit and block a lot of shots. And then directly to Base Pistons' question, my nose, I don't want Tobias Harris. I think he's going to cost too much, and he's already getting older. Not old, but he's getting older. His production is leveling off a little bit. I'm a little bit worried about that. Gordon Hayward, he kind of fell off a little bit here in OKC. I'm just not all that interested. And Talen Horton Tucker, because that's just a guy I could see them like looking at and going, well, he's young. You know, maybe there's something untapped there. And I just don't think that there is. So out of those names, you know, what are some thoughts?
The rumor is the Lakers are still trying to include Talen Horton Tucker in trade packages for whoever will take them. But the one that stuck out to me is I was thinking about the DeMar DeRozan thing, and I just don't know if it makes sense. I think he would make sense as a player if he's willing to come here. I just think for the deal that they would probably get him on, it doesn't make sense. And as many wrong things that have happened in the past few years, they're still maintaining cap flexibility year after year. And the thing this offseason, we want to see them use it for something that will result in more wins and just getting out of this downward spiral. But it's important to use it in a way that's not going to set you up to have to tear the whole thing down in a year, 2 years, however long it is. Like, there hasn't been anything that has hurt it. Like the Blake Griffin deal, and eventually you have to like sell off everyone for next to nothing, and then you're building everything up with nothing. So depending on what the deal is, I'm just not sure about that one. But like, I would love if they could bring in Malik Monk or Grayson Allen on a short term, maybe 2 year, somewhat affordable. I know you're not going to get them for the cheap or anything like that. But just guys that can space the floor. Like, that's the one thing that I feel like needs to be addressed, especially if we're trotting out a similar starting lineup where you have at least two guys who can't shoot the ball.
All right, let's quickly hit on this next one from Hunt Baker in the DVV comments. I only bring it up because we've gotten it a few times, so I figure we ought to address it. But he just says, is there any possibility that Tom Gores is going to sell the team? And honestly, could somebody else buy the team? That's what he asked. So just give the Tom Gores speech, Blake. Go for it.
I mean, I do not know anything really about how this world works, but I could say if I owned an NBA team, I would definitely not sell it right now. So, I mean, I don't think this is like, I don't think it's the answer. I am really interested. We have, next time we record, the season will be over. So we got a letter from the general manager last season. We are probably, I would definitely guess that there's going to be something that comes out if, depending on whatever news happens, if there are any changes made. I think at the very minimum, there has to be public statements from Weaver, Tom Gores. So I don't, like, there are changes that need to happen, but I don't see them happening at that level anytime soon. We haven't ever heard any inklings that it would be a possibility. So I'm just not seeing it. I feel like you have to make changes organizationally and of course roster wise, but at that level, I think he's here for the long haul, and I don't think he's the problem, I guess I'll say.
Well, yeah. And just so quickly, I agree with you. I don't really think he's the problem either. I mean, I know they've been very bad since he's bought the team, but they've also had, you know, some fairly poor leadership decisions that have gone on in that time span. And maybe that tracks back up to him. Maybe not. I don't know. But I do know that he's got a pretty open pocketbook. We've seen that, especially with the Monty Williams contract. Obviously, many would say that's not panned out how we've wanted it to. And I would agree. But he was willing to do it. You know, so he's never been pinching on money. And he's generally pretty uninvolved with roster decisions. The only time I can remember off the top of my head where he stepped in and nixed something was when Van Gundy wanted to trade Drummond to Sacramento back in the day. Like, I can't think of another time where he's really stepped in and gotten in the way of player personnel movements. So, like, I mean, if you just, if you take away all the context and you say, what do you want in an owner? Me, I want a guy that just hires someone and then gets out of the way. If he asks for money, he opens up the paybook and he writes a check. And that's it. That's all I want from the owner. And Tom Gores has done that. So I don't have too many issues with Tom Gores. But let's just leave it there. Bryce Simon, he brings up a question here about Jalen Duren. Says, do you guys think that the Jalen Duren grab-and-go moves, quote-unquote, where he gets a rebound and just takes it coast-to-coast himself, that should be a long-term priority? Take away, you know, the lack of effectiveness right now. Is the value of him doing that even worth it long-term? What do you think?
I don't think so. Like, he's not – he's athletic, but he's not super quick in transition by any means. So it's something that's just infuriating right now, and it's especially infuriating when it ends up in a turnover or just a look that has absolutely no shot, and then it results in Duren not getting back on defense the other way. So that's the main issue, is just when it doesn't result in a score, whether it's from JD, whether it's from another player, like Jalen Duren being that initiator, which, Wes, I know you've pointed this out, it results in him just not being able to quickly get back on defense. I don't know if it's effort, if it's what have you, just context of the play, but I think that's the biggest issue. And where we need to see the most improvement with Duren is on the defensive end of the floor. And if this is something that is going to hinder that, I would just say, put it on the back burner.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been hard on Duren on this podcast.
I probably took what you were going to say, so I apologize.
No, you're good. I mean, I just feel like I'm getting to like the broken record portion of the season, where it's just like, look, he's not a great passer. He doesn't have great court vision. He doesn't process things all that well on either side of the ball. I don't understand why they continue to prioritize making him a playmaker and a hub on the offense when he's just not really shown any indication of being able to do that. This is not Bam Adebayo. This is not Nikola Jokic. This is Jalen Duren. I mean, Chili Damon brought up, it's far closer to what Andre Drummond used to do when he was young and with the Pistons, where he'd get those rebounds and he'd bring it up the floor. And Andre Drummond, after a while, finally figured out the only thing he could really effectively do in those situations is just dribble into a dribble handoff. And at that point, get it to a guard. Like, you're not providing anything at that point. You're just going directly into a dribble handoff and probably resetting from there, if we're being honest. So no, I don't think that the value for that is there at all. I don't know why they keep pushing for it. Like, I don't know why he's getting these top of the key ISOs every now and then either. It just, there's so much that doesn't make sense to me, and this is one of those that's up near the top. This next one, this is from Keep Khan. He says, if it's up to you guys, do you give Quentin Grimes an extension this offseason? What do you think of the defense from the bench unit with a healthy Stewart, Asar Thompson, and Quentin Grimes?
Oof, that's a tough one just because we've seen so little of him. But, like, I'm leaning towards yes, but it's a debate. I think it has to be an affordable deal. Like, it should 100% be, let's say, like 50% to like two-thirds of what Stewart got in his extension. Like, I don't think it should take up a considerable amount of the cap by any means. But in the few games we have seen of Grimes, he has looked good defensively. So we at least know he can be one of the team. Like, outside of Stewart and Asar Thompson, he was probably the best defender on the team when he was active. So at least we know he can help in that sense. We want to see him shoot the ball better. We have a super small sample size. He didn't shoot it great when he was in New York this season. He did last season. So that's an unknown, and that's why I'm not like a for sure, yes, let's extend him. But I think guys in his archetype that have the skills that he has are tough to find. So now that you have one that you gave up a decent amount at the trade deadline. Like, they might have moved Burks and Bogdanovich anyway, but if Bojan was still here, they had that option for him with that small guarantee next year. So I think making that trade was with the mindset that Grimes is going to be here for more than just this year. So I'd be surprised if he wasn't. It's just more of a tough conversation because we've seen so little from him.
I completely agree with you. I think that if the Pistons are able to convince Quentin Grimes to sign a multiple year extension this offseason, they would be wise to do so. Okay. The problem is Quentin Grimes is about one season removed from being a high level starter on a playoff basketball team in New York. He shot the three ball well. He was one of, if not their best perimeter defender. This season, the shot fell off, but he's been dealing with injuries since the start of the year, it seems like, and he hasn't played a lot. The contract that Quentin Grimes could get this summer is a lot lower than what he would have gotten last summer if he was extension eligible. And I bring this up to say, maybe Quentin Grimes doesn't want to sign an extension this summer. Maybe he just wants to have that team option picked up and go into restricted free agency where he gets a year where ideally he's healthy and he can perform at a really high level like he did just one season ago. Like, if he does that, his price goes way up. I think this could absolutely be a situation where he's a guy that's going to want to bet on himself. And honestly, he's got a lot of reason to do so. There's a lot to bet on, at least from his perspective. So, you know, yeah, if the Pistons are able to get him to put pen to paper, I think it's a great idea. You might be saving some money in the long run, but I'm not even sure he wants that.
Right. I mean, just to play devil's advocate, could it go the other way, though? And maybe this injury thing, I don't know how long term it is, but maybe he doesn't play good next season and he wants to get like a longer term deal. I guess that's the flip side of it, that that's for Quentin Grimes and his agent to debate about on their end. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is a risk, right? That's why they say it's you're betting on yourself.
Right.
It just, I don't know. I think it's totally possible that the Pistons could try to get him to sign a deal and he'd just go, nah, I'm good. I'll wait. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring up a draft question here. This is from our guy KCP43, and it's through in the DBB comments. He wants to talk about Keyshawn George. He says, I'm surprised Keyshawn George is not getting more love. What do you guys think about him as a prospect? And I'm going to be honest, I haven't gotten to him in my draft work yet. I'm working my way down to it, but he's lower on quite a few boards. So I'm curious as well. Should he be getting more love? What do you think about him?
He's an interesting one because he came on the scene as a draft prospect, like worked his way up and up throughout the season. Freshman at Miami, he is 6'8", and he has like grown since he got to Miami. So we talked about Dalton Connect earlier. Like, Keyshawn George is still a freshman, still has a lot of growing to do, but he has shown flashes as a three-point shooter, needs to improve as a defender as well, but he's shown some defensive chops on that end of the floor too. And he's just, every time I watch him, he's just a guy who seems to like know where he should be and just has a good feel for the game, which, I mean, it's hard to read, and that's something that will be decided a lot in the combine and pre-draft workouts. The other thing with him is if you look at his numbers, they won't wow you by any means. I think that's just because of the context of the team that he was playing in. There were a lot of mouths to feed in Miami, and I think some guys were kind of playing hero ball at times, like watching that team. But he's super interesting wing prospect, exactly a type of archetype of guy that the Pistons would want. I've seen him in like the 15 to 20 range. A similar guy is Johnny Furphy from Kansas, who's another freshman wing who was getting some hype. I think George is sort of eclipsing Furphy right now, but we'll see where that goes towards the draft. I was actually trying to look to see whether George declared. I think I saw that he did declare, but I'm not sure if he's maintaining his eligibility, because earlier in the season, he was a guy that no one even really knew if he was going to come out this year. So he played well enough to be in that conversation, in first round conversations for a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of teams. So it's an interesting one. I don't know how the Pistons would make it happen. It would probably have to be through a trade, but I like the kid.
So what would be his, I guess, ideal role? Like, everything goes right and he becomes a starter one day in Detroit. Like, what role is he filling for this future hypothetical Pistons team?
I think he would be, so if he's playing next to Enesar Thompson, I think he would be like what he would bring, ideally what Asar does defensively on the offensive end for you as that shooter, the guy who can knock down corner threes. But he doesn't need total control either. I feel like all these guys we're talking about are just hopefully someone who can play off of Cade Cunningham and make things work. I think George would make sense. Like, I actually have seen, and I feel like I'm going to scare people by saying this, I've seen people compare his like size and length to what Kevin Knox was in his freshman year at Kentucky. George is like a much better player and has much better feel for the game. But similar archetypes, but hopefully can shoot the ball better and has room to grow defensively as well.
All right. This probably is our last one. We'll see how it goes. We might be able to sneak another one in there depending on how this conversation shakes out. But this is from our guy Big Cheese in the comments here. He's saying, should the Pistons prioritize developing Cade and Jalen Duren as a duo, or Cade and Jaden Ivey as a duo? And I think we can add to this as well, Asar Thompson, Cade and Asar Thompson as a duo. So which of the, I guess, twosomes do you think the organization ought to prioritize?
Oof, this is a tough one. Of these two, I would lean Cade and Duren. If we're looping Asar in, I would say Cade and Asar, just because of what we've seen out of Duren defensively. I think they can improve at that spot. If it's not going to be Duren, hopefully there's a five that they can find that is more of a rim protector and holds them up on defense. But for all of them, I think it has to be Cade and Asar, just because we've seen that Asar Thompson can be an all NBA level defender. The shot is a huge question. We've seen him improve a little bit, but we don't know what that's going to be like. But he's still been able to make plays, do some exciting stuff off the ball. It's just when Asar Thompson is out there, and Jalen Duren for that matter, they're both not going to shoot the ball. I think Asar's archetype is harder to find, and maybe what Jalen Duren does is not easier to replace, but not as many successful teams have. Like, if you exchange Jalen Duren for a floor spacing big who can shoot the three a little bit, I think that's your ideal. Duren's more that like traditional center. So I think the clear answer to me is Cade and Asar, but if we're just keeping it to Ivy and Duren, I would lean towards Duren because we more have a question of Cade and Ivy's fit together.
We've talked about this a little bit before, but I do think this gets into, well, exactly the problem with this roster construction as it stands right now. Between the three pairings with Cade Cunningham, be it Duren, Ivy, and Asar Thompson, all of them individually make a lot of sense. You know, Cade and Duren makes a lot of sense. Cade is a very good and very large playmaker. Pairing him with an athletic five, that makes a lot of sense. Pairing Cade with a guy like Jaden Ivey, who could kind of be, you know, the counterpunch. Cade wants to slow it down. Jaden Ivey's going to go fast, hits you with the athleticism, and hey, maybe one day he's league average from three as well. Like, that makes a lot of sense, especially as a secondary playmaker. And then Asar Thompson makes a lot of sense too. You know, he can perform in the dunker's spot. He's a very good cutter, which looks really good next to Cade Cunningham. And he's an incredible defensive player as well. So, like, all of these taken at face value make sense. Put all four of them together and it all kind of comes crumbling down. So, you know, I bring this up to say, I do think this is a little bit of a choose your own adventure situation. You know, like, everyone probably has a different answer. I'm sure that the organization's going to have a different answer than I would. If it's up to me, like, I would be prioritizing Jaden Ivey, but I'd also be changing the other three starting positions to really focus on shooting so that Cade and Ivey have a lot of space to work in. I think that would work really well. Asar Thompson also requires you to change quite a bit of the other three starters, right? If you want to focus on that and you really, really love Asar Thompson's defense, his athleticism, that's fine. You know, that's fine. That'll work. But again, you're really going to need shooters out there. And with Jalen Duren, you know, if you really love the lob threat that he brings and the rebounding that he brings, then you better add three fantastic perimeter defenders, because we know he's not going to add anything on that other end of the floor. So, look, if it's me, I'd go Ivy first. If not that, I would do Asar Thompson. I would then do Jalen Duren. You know, I'd also add with Jalen Duren, I'm not just trying to, like, hate on the kid or anything, but, you know, we saw fairly recently when he missed some time that the offensive efficiency didn't take too much of a hit when James Wiseman stepped in for him. That's not to say that James Wiseman is as good as Jalen Duren. He is not. Jalen Duren is a much better player than James Wiseman. But James Wiseman runs the floor hard. He sets hard screens and he's athletic. You put a guy like that with Cade Cunningham and it looks all right. You know what I mean? So maybe it's not at the same level, but it's still fairly good. I just think he's easily the most replaceable on offense. And what he doesn't provide you on defense is painful. Really, really painful. So, yeah, I think I'd say Cade and Ivy, number one, Cade and Asar, number two, and then Cade and Duren kind of being a distant third.
Yeah, and this was brought up in the chat by YouTube user. Like, no matter which pairing that you are prioritizing, you have to maximize around it. Right now, this yep. roster is not doing that. They don't have ample three-point shooting. They don't have other great defenders that hold up whatever the duo is on that end of the floor. So it's about building a more complete roster too. While it is important to figure out which young players you're going to keep around for the long haul, which ones you want to build around, hopefully in the off season we do see a lot of building that complementary roster.
Well, I'll say last point on this with specifically Cade and Duren together, looking at the defensive end of the floor, you know, a lot of the rule changes that have been coming down from on high in the NBA have really, really devalued perimeter defense, or at least how we've traditionally thought about it. You can see this around the league. The best defenses in the NBA right now have guys that can erase shots at the rim. And it seems to me that what a lot of these franchises are doing is having their guards and their perimeter defenders funneling everything towards one guy, kind of playing that like old school five-man role on defense where you're almost like playing a zone as the five-man just so you can sit there and help and erase shots as they come up. And the best defenses in the NBA have these guys, your Chet Holmgrens, your Brooke Lopez's, guys like that, right? And with Jalen Duren, it does really limit you. Like, you need, if he's going to be the guy, you cannot funnel things to him. He's shown this year that even in instances where he could contest, he kind of shies away from it, maybe just to avoid foul trouble, which, you know, that's fair, but but maybe he's not seeing it. I don't know what the reason is, but he's shown that he's not going to be that guy, at least not right now. So you need like three other Asar Thompsons so that you could just not let people get to the paint, which is much harder to do these days than the alternative, right? So if you're just looking for a simple path towards improving this team's defense, get a guy on the back end that can block shots and kind of be the end point of the funnel. And in that way, like I, I'm not trying to like hate on the kid. He's super athletic and he's a very good NBA basketball player. But in this case, the weakness is just a very difficult one to deal with, I should say.
Right. And I don't think it is, last thing I'll say too, I don't think it really is like, you don't have to remove Durin to make this happen. I mean, you can bring in someone that you run your defense around that is coming off the bench that is playing close to 30 minutes a game, and maybe Isaiah Stewart is the quarterback of your defense in the starting unit. I don't think it necessarily has to be a one or the other. Maybe it's harder if you try to thread the needle and make both things work, but I think it could happen.
Well, and I'll say, well, too, what about like bring Durin off the bench as kind of an energy lob threat big who can, you know, do a little bit of other things as well offensively and give you a jolt? Like add a guy in free agency maybe, or I guess draft Alex Saar, but keep Durin and bring him in off the bench. Like he would be a top five backup big in the NBA if you shift him into that role. Like that would work. That would work really well. Like I don't think you have to move Durin by any means, but maybe by not prioritizing him as a pairing, it opens up other things and maybe his role then just changes a little bit. But like that could work, right?
It could. I think it's hard because no one has ever seen him as anything but your starting five man. I don't know. Maybe it's a tough conversation. I feel like right now I don't really see a world where he comes off the bench for this team. Who knows what's going to happen, but in theory, like the way that you bring it up, it should work. I think that would work well. And depending on where you have Stu and, or where you're putting Asar Thompson, like you probably at least have some good defenders that are coming off the bench with Durin in that scenario as well. So it would work. I guess I'm just not sure how realistic it would be, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, I'd also say that my perception, at least right now from the outside looking in, I bet that they, being the Pistons, they would prioritize Cade and Durin above the rest. So, you know, hey, what do I know? We should also bring up if they do want to move Durin to the bench, like if that's a thing that happens, that opens up a whole Isaiah Stewart sized can of worms that we don't have time to get into today, but at least
we have a whole off season to get into it.
Yeah, exactly. So. We'll drop that little seed there in the off season planting bed. We'll let that grow, marinate a little bit, and we'll revisit it in, you know, a month or two. But until then, I think that we got to wrap it up here.
Yeah, a lot of changes to come that we'll dig into. We will definitely be on a little bit of our own choose your own adventure path with how this team is going to look next year, because no one really knows right now. But in the meantime, thank you everyone for joining us. Like and subscribe at Detroit Bad Boys on YouTube. You can find all our written work on DetroitBadBoys.com as well. Special thank you to Sean Corp, the managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And shout out to you guys for all the great questions and talking points. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all. Enjoy the last few games of the season, if you can.